Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, it was awesome being able to talk to you. I love being able to share about the business junk drawer because it is a very easily forgotten area within organizations, but it plays a huge role in people's lives and the stress that they experience every day.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Happy New Year, by the way. We're in 2022. So what do you do with tasks, chores, problems, issues that cause you to worry, but you don't have time to deal with them? Do you put them in a business junk drawer? I know, I didn't know what one was either. I've heard of other junk drawers, but not the business junk drawer. So guest mentor Sarah Becker, she's the founder and CEO of Clear Simple Business. She's joining me to discuss three business junk drawers that we need to clean up this year. So Sarah has been a process implement investigator and implementer for 10 years. She most recently worked for a Fortune 50 retailer where she had a successful track record of improving and enhancing processes throughout the organization, most notably reducing the amount of time it took to complete a monthly task from 3 business days to 1 and a weekly report from 1 business day to 20 minutes. Why does she do it? Sarah was in many positions where tasks took way too long to get done, and they were slow and painful. It bothered her so much that she had to come up with a better way of doing things. And that is just what Sarah did. Far too often, she sees companies operating off manual, outdated tasks that are error-laden and lead to profit loss. I've experienced that. So working with Sarah can resolve these issues, resulting in a reduction of errors, increased clarity, improved peace of mind, scalability, and profit margins. Sarah believes that people work harder than they need to. Why not work together to make your life work easier and be more enjoyable? So there are 5 areas that she works with clients. We're just going to be focusing on the second one, which is cleaning the business junk drawer. But the first one is Excel magic. So she's an expert in Excel. Train the doer. Outside the box solutions is what she comes up with. And she helps you get back to the basics. So let's get started on figuring out what the business junk drawer is and what are the 3 areas that we can get started on cleaning up. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah. Where am I reaching you at today?
I am sitting on my couch at home.
And where's home?
It is in Corcoran, Minnesota, which a lot of people probably don't know of. I normally get blank looks when I say Corcoran. So then I switch to it's by Maple Grove and Rogers.
Okay. If you live in the Twin Cities, our listeners are all over the world. So what is a business junk drawer and why do we have them?
So a business junk drawer is an area, well, I guess it's a metaphorical area. Obviously, it's not a real junk drawer, but it's kind of where all of your tasks and chores and problems and issues and things that drive you or your employees crazy, probably on a daily basis. It's where those tasks go to sit because you know they're an issue, but you don't have the time to deal with them right now. And just like our junk drawers in our kitchen, most likely you forget about them and you don't deal with them and then they overflow and they're kind of like attacking you almost like, getting in your face. You're like, finally, I have to do something about these.
Yeah, right. It's just like, yeah, exactly. It's like dirt in the house. You know, what's your level? Yeah. If you don't have a cleaner that comes in on a regular basis, what's your level of what you can tolerate for dust and dirt?
Okay. Yeah, so the business junk drawer gets filled up. It gets forgotten, but it's still sucking the energy out of your employees or yourself and kind of causing havoc within your organization behind the scenes, just like the clutter within your house does as well.
Yeah. So you have figured out 7 categories or ways that people use, business owners use the business junk drawers. How did you come up with the top 7?
It was really the most common places that I saw it at all the organizations I worked with, everywhere from the Fortune 50 retailer I worked for down to, you know, the small 10-person office. They all kind of shared the same themes on where they were having these pain points.
This is an area that we can just kind of ground right now. So push your feet into the ground or the floor or whatever. Squeeze your toes, lift your toes up, and place them down. And then do that again. So raise your toes up and place them back down and try it one more time. Squeeze your toes, lift them up, and then place them down. All right, because, you know, we're grounding into hearing about our business junk drawers. We want to make sure our feet are planted on the ground. Or if you're listening, you can keep your foot on the pedal. Anyways, we're going to talk about 3 of the business junk drawers that you have figured out. And the first one is financial anything. So what does the financial anything include, and why can this junk drawer get so out of control?
Right. Financial anything, I mean, it's money. Anywhere that money is coming in and out of your organization. And what I find is that this one typically gets out of control because they are typically the first processes that get set up. There's money coming in and money coming out, very vital to an organization. So typically these are the first ones that get set up, which is wonderful that processes get created for these. However, what I tend to see is that whoever's setting up those processes is setting them up for the moment. It's the beginning of your business and you process 10 invoices a week. Typically, what's most common is that person is setting up that process for, okay, I can handle 10 invoices a week and this is how I do it in order to complete 10 invoices a week. But then fast forward to, you know, a year, 5 years, 10 years, however long your organization has been in business, and you're still operating typically on that 10 invoice per week process, but now you're processing 100 or 200 or 1,000. And so you can kind of see where it's pretty obvious of, okay, this same process is most likely not going to work as well, be as easy for that person now that they're invoicing, you know, so much more.
Yeah. So what do you do in that situation? How do you work with the...
It's really sitting down and looking at, okay, how are we doing this? What is our end result? Where does this information need to go to? And helping them find that more automated and efficient way. So typically when you're setting up a process for 10 invoices, it's okay if it's done on paper. It's okay if you're walking the, you know, printed off paper invoice to the next person who needs it. But if you're invoicing 1,000 or more, or even 100, it doesn't work as well that way. So you really need to adjust the way that you're doing the work. And a lot of time it helps to have, you know, that outsider come in and start asking the, like, well, why do we do it this way? What if we did it this way? What if we had it within a system or changed the way that things are done? And that can help people, you know, think outside the box. Kind of one of my areas that I work with a lot is helping to think outside the box and get away from, well, this is the way we've always done it, where, you know, this example is a very good example of, well, it's the way we've always done it. It's how we started it off at the beginning and it worked great.
Yeah. So the processes and systems that a business owner puts in place initially, they need to consider the volume. So how can we grow with the system and how do we make the transition from one system to the next? Really factor that in. Like if you, So what have you noticed happens to clients that leave cash flow issues in this junk drawer too long? And what are they? You know, what are the cash flow issues that you're seeing in the junk drawer?
Yeah, a lot of it is, so if you're thinking of your business leader or a business owner, and a lot of your decisions come from, you know, the cash flow that you have, the dollars that you have. And if you're waiting so long to get that information, then it makes it very hard to make those strategic decisions. And it can really bump up the stress level that you're experiencing. You kind of every month to make those decisions on, okay, where's my cash? What investments can I make? Where do I need to cut back? If those dollar informations are delayed, you know, it's hard to make those real-time decisions.
Yeah. So what about, like, business owners do have bookkeepers. They're usually not doing all the cash themselves. They're getting some help. Do you work with the business owner then? Or, you know, sometimes the business owner can be in denial and the bookkeeper is trying to alert the business owner that there's an issue that they need to work on about how the process of how they're keeping track of things or getting information back and forth. How do you address those kinds of experiences?
So it'd be working with everyone involved. So if it's a bookkeeper, if they're external, internal, any area within the organization that has a touch point within that process is who I'd be working with and communicating with and really talking to. And part of the work that I do a lot of times is getting those people in the same room together, sitting them down, cutting off kind of that outside other tasks that need to get done and really focusing on that one core issue for that half hour or that hour. And it's amazing how even like a half hour meeting, how much work can get done if you actually get people to sit down and communicate, you know, what they're experiencing and understanding what the other person is experiencing. No one is intentionally trying to make the next person's job miserable.
Yeah.
Typically, it's I'm doing what I know of how to be successful within my job. And I don't realize that, you know, maybe you need different information or you need it at a different time. And so opening up those lines of communication, sometimes that is all that needs to be done to solve that issue. And that's a big thing with the business junk drawer. Just like our junk drawers, when they get overwhelming at home, we feel like it's a big problem and it needs a big solution. And I don't have time to create this big solution and implement this, you know, huge, crazy, brand new process. But sometimes it can be solved with a half hour meeting with the people who are involved.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what size company or how many employees is who you mainly work with.
Yeah, it's anywhere from 10 employees to 300 is kind of the typical area, which is, I know, is a huge range, but I do have different solutions that can help in each of those different areas. And then coming out of a large organization, I also have that corporate experience and so can jump into that pretty well.
Yeah. And what do you suggest for listeners? How can they keep this business junk drawer to a minimum? What are the minimal things that they should keep in this junk drawer? And how can they move out of denial or keep it from piling up?
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be a business junk drawer. There's always going to be things that need to be worked on. However, if you just continuously work on a portion of that business junk drawer all the time, kind of that continuous improvement, then you're going to keep that, you know, those tasks that need to be, or those projects that need to be looked at, you're going to keep those to a manageable level.
So factoring into a weekly schedule or a daily, what do you suggest for, let's say, an employer who has less than 10 employees?
I would say always having at least one continuous improvement project on the radar.
Oh, that's good.
At a time.
Yeah.
So always having one. So you have all your day-to-day tasks, but always having one project that's at the forefront of, okay, we're gonna help to make improvements here.
Okay. That's really helpful. Probably helps also to get a little help with it.
Yes. Yeah, it's hard. Even, you know, I even found myself as an employee, as you get so used to doing something one way, that it's hard to think of different ways. It's easy to kind of to stay within the box of like, oh, this process we've always done within Excel. And so I'm trying to recreate it within Excel, where as someone coming in fresh, maybe have you ever thought of using SharePoint or, you know, some different software? And it's like, oh, that would be great. So I actually had that experience happening. I remember it when I was at Target, you know, trying to recreate this process. And I was so focused on the, okay, this is the system that we always use, that I wasn't thinking of other opportunities with other softwares that could also provide us with very good end result.
Yeah.
And so it's good to have, even if it's someone within the organization, like maybe you're in accounting and, you know, just talking to like a project manager or someone outside of the department, that can be very helpful. So again, you know, keeping those lines of communication open are huge in process improvement work.
And what kind of financial software systems have you seen in place besides QuickBooks?
There's Sage, I know, is a big one. Peachtree, those I think maybe get with bigger organizations. Or when I was working at a large corporation, we worked in SAP. It's kind of a bigger one.
Yeah,
I would say kind of the smaller ones. QuickBooks seems to, you know, do everything that is needed for that organization. So you never want to overcomplicate a process by getting, I guess, maybe too big of a software. And then you also want to remember that a software isn't going to solve those problems. It's really kind of that underlying process that you need to be aware of and how that is working.
Yeah. And I would suggest with business owners, if you're working with a bookkeeper or an accounting firm and something doesn't make the financials or the reporting system or whatever, I would suggest talking about it. Because if it doesn't make sense to you, you shouldn't be doing it. It's also an avenue where I've seen embezzlement start, is where people get talked into, because entrepreneurs typically aren't, they're focused on the opportunity and they're very financially savvy, but not always. And so it's a learned skill, but focusing in on the junk drawer and saying, this is one aspect, or this is one financial report, like a cash flow report, that will give you volumes if you can do a 3-month cash flow projection report on a regular basis or out to in a year. But usually, even if you do it for a month, the cash flow projections will give you more information than a profit and loss statement of what's going on in the present moment with the inflow and outflow of cash. Anyways, that was just one area that I was thinking about where I've seen problems start in finances when business owners do not fully take charge of their own finances.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can be scary. Money brings up a lot of emotions and feelings, and people sometimes may want to say, no, you take that. I don't need to worry about that. But yeah, it's a vital part of the organization. It's what keeps the ship afloat. So it's very important to know what's happening, know how that, you know, where the dollars are coming in, where they're going out.
Yep, it's the lifeline of the business. Exactly. So the second business junk drawer has to do with customer service issues that crop up. When you're talking about customer service issues, what are you referring to?
Yeah, it's really everything that's customer facing. So it's customer facing, but it's also those internal processes that the customers can feel. You know, they can feel that things are taking longer. So it's like the speed at which they get their product. That's a customer facing process.
So what kinds of problems occur when there's no system in place to address customer service, or like business owners, on-time manufacturing really has been in play for decades. And now, because of the delays, planning ahead is really critical for longer periods of time. So I'm hearing business owners order, you know, products and parts and services, not services, but products and supplies months and months in advance now, which is so different than how we were operating before COVID and before these issues started facing our borders with ships getting stuck at the ports. So what is your take on that, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge issue, a huge struggle. And I think, I mean, customers are sometimes more gentle on organizations because they understand that. But then they're also pretty quick to jump ship if they can't get what they want as soon as they can. And a lot of that supply chain, it's not something that a company can necessarily have control over. But what they can have control over is that once it gets to the, you know, their warehouse or their business, what do they do with it after that? So focusing really on the speed at which they can get their product out to the customers, like that's where they can have control. And so this may actually be a great opportunity if there are times where we have to wait an extra week to get this product. You know, that's a great opportunity to be able to slow down and say, okay, well, once we have it, what can we do now to get prepared for when that lands at our warehouse so that when it lands, we can move at lightning speed to now get the product out to the customer.
Yeah, and I imagine this is kind of like the financial, the bookkeeping or the processing, you know, invoices, a scenario that you talked about is that you start out, you know, with certain processes, but the volume of customers really increases and there's no process in place to address like the speed of emails. So what are your suggestions there? How do they solve that issue?
It's really, they have to slow down. They have to listen, you know, listen to the customers, make sure that communication is top notch with those customers and connecting with them and understanding like, okay, well, where are we having issues? And then being able to focus on, you know, those issue areas kind of one at a time. I mean, I feel like this is really a opportunity to, you know, take that, like we need to slow down in order to speed up. So a lot of companies, like you said, like the customer service, a lot of it's like, okay, like the invoices, we only had, you know, 20 products going out the door and now we have 500. And so if those processes haven't changed on how you create those products, then you're definitely falling behind. And so what a lot of organizations do is they just continue to speed up and they don't take that time to slow down and really look at, okay, how are we doing everything? If it's a physical space, is everything set up? So it's very much like that assembly line. Or I relate a lot to like Chipotle or any Subway fast food type restaurant where you can see, okay, they have everything set up in the exact order of how you're going to be making a burrito. And so if you have physical space, making sure that all of that is lined up. And then even in the digital space, you still have that, you know, that those burrito making steps. And so making sure that those are also lined up. So because you'll have handoffs then. You'll have the physical product if it's, you know, physical product place. And then, well, now how do the, you know, the people in accounting who are billing for that, or the people in shipping, how do they know that now it's their turn to take the baton?
Yeah. And looking at it from the customer's perspective, I think that came up in one of our conversations. And I think that's a really good piece of advice too, is what is the customer going through in working with us? Whether we're selling a product or retail or we're manufacturing something, what is the end user experiencing with us in getting what they want?
Right. And be honest with yourself. If I was the end user, how would I feel? Like take out the bias of, you know, this is my company, this is my baby, I love this place. step away from that and said, okay, if this was a company that I had bought from the first time, would I want to buy again after, you know, the experience that I had?
Nice. So what do you suggest for business owners to stay on top of the customer service issues junk drawer? How can they do that?
Right. It's responding quickly to feedback.
Like you had mentioned in the last suggestion for the cash flow and the financial area, financial anything area, you suggested one continuing improvement project. Is there a way they can work in customer service issues in kind of the same way?
Yes. Yeah, I would say always. I mean, that, and it's continuous improvement. You really want to always be observing what's going on and making updates if you see different areas that are struggling. And so always having a, really always having a project going is key. Because it's really about, I mean, and it doesn't always have to, when I say project, it doesn't have to be a, you know, we go from completely reinvent the wheel in this one area.
Give an example.
A small little change that can actually have a huge impact.
Can you give an example? That would be helpful too.
Yes, actually a very small change, which kind of made me laugh, is I was working with a mortgage company. And so they have a mortgage specific software. And so it's, you can customize it quite a bit. And they have what's called the pipeline. So it would give all the loan offers, there's, you could set it up where they have a view of, okay, here are all my active loans. And so are there different stages within the loans? And so they, the loan officers had to go to, I think it was like 5 different pipelines in order to see, say all, maybe they had 50 loans at a time. So they'd have to go to 5 different pipelines to see, here are all my loans, here are the statuses that each of these loans are in. And then from there, they could then understand, okay, here's the work that I need to do on this specific loan. So when I looked at that, we looked at the different pipelines and all of them were very similar. And so it was a matter of, let's just add these 2 fields to this one pipeline and you can actually see all 5 statuses at once. So with one shot. And so it's something very simple that you wouldn't think like, oh, it's not that big of a deal that I'm going to all 5 of these places. But it's a lot of energy to go to all 5 of those places. And then sometimes we get distracted so quickly. So then it's like, oh, what was I looking for? Where was I going? And you can get off track. Whereas having that one and you can see them all, and then you can make your decisions just based off of that one place and not have to bounce around and get as distracted. And so after making that change, it was actually very funny. One of the loan officers came into the office where I was working at and was just like, I have so much time on my hands now. Like, I didn't realize that it was so difficult to do my job until now. It's the way it is, and it's so wonderful, and it's amazing. And it's, you know, it was a 10-minute change.
Yeah. Well, in an industry that is filled with paperwork, like the mortgage companies, I mean, that is a huge customer service issue, is huge. So, yeah, taking a look at simple things can really resolve bigger issues. Like where there is a bottleneck in the system, it might be a simple way of, like you're talking about, fixing the problem. Mm-hmm. So the third area in our business junk drawer is quality assurance problems. So what are those?
Yeah, so these typically happen when you begin to get busier and you start hiring more and more people. But what a lot of times, if you don't have the processes set up before you're hiring those people, then those new people come in with different experiences, different opinions, and they might start to do the process or create your product in a different way than the people before did it. And then maybe you have to hire more people because you're getting overwhelmed again. And so the more and more people that come in, then there's just more and more ways that people are doing kind of that same thing. And so obviously the quality suffers because not all of them are going to be the same because they're all individual people and they're going to be bringing in their uniqueness and their unique experience into the mix.
Yeah.
And so I have worked with business owners who struggle with the feeling like a dictator and wanting to enable their people to, you know, think for themselves and have that flexibility to do their work in their own way, which is wonderful. I'm a huge proponent of that.
Yeah, however, being more collaborative, but not a buddy.
Right. But you do also want the same results. And that's where I find a lot of leaders, they struggle where they like, I want, you know, all my project managers to be providing the, you know, exact same customer service, the exact same quality projects, but then they don't give them kind of the guidelines on here's how we do it as an organization. And so then what happens is you have, you know, five different people going five different ways, and then the business owner gets frustrated, but you can't really fault the employees for that, because they're doing what they know how to do in order to be successful within their role.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
yeah. And so that's where a lot of kind of that quality assurance, like those quality problems come into play, is you don't set up those guidelines.
Okay. So a place to start really is just, you know, setting up some guidelines, or if you've got some loose guidelines, maybe take just having a discussion and kind of working at these three areas into your calendar, your weekly calendar, to take a look at and maybe set some goals around each week. And it might even be just 15 minutes, but it's 15 minutes more than you might not have put in that area before. So what do you suggest a listener do to assert self-leadership in this junk area drawer?
It's starting the communication.
Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes having the conversation can be starting it can be the hardest part.
I like your idea about stop reinventing the wheel. Many business owners, part of their success is their ability to be innovative and creative in their thinking. When you're looking at business processes, it's not good to use your creative energies in that area, because these processes are practical and they need to be functional. And so adding creative bookkeeping methods is not the best way in which to work out your financial issues or, you know, with quality assurance. What do you suggest there?
If you have a repeatable process, you don't want to be reinventing the wheel with that repeatable process. You don't want to, like, if you have a monthly process, you don't want to every month have to rethink, like, okay, how did I do this last month? And how am I going to do it again this month? Because last month, maybe you did 10 steps, and this month you can only remember 8 steps. So you miss something and things are inconsistent. So you set up those processes so you don't have to use your creative or remembering energy.
Yeah.
Problem-solving energy for your repeatable processes. And the more those processes you have set up and documented and they're efficient, then the more energy you now have to do kind of that the fun creative stuff, the, you know, futuristic or whatever area that is for you. That's that fun creative stuff, because that's really why you're in business.
Yeah.
And so to not have to spend so much of your energy in those other areas that are repeatable and really can be, you know, documented and created very easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, those are great tips. And I like the part too with quality assurance, to really look at the repeatable processes and setting up some guidelines. And it seems like every time we move through a growth spurt in our businesses, it's a good time to kind of take a look at our processes and figure out different ways in which to address them and adjust our calendars and schedules accordingly. Is there anything else you wanted to add before? I'm kind of curious to get to know you a little bit more about how you grew up.
We can jump into that. That works.
Okay. All right. So where did you grow up and who else was in your home when you grew up?
So I grew up in Maple Grove, Minnesota. So that's in the Twin Cities area. And I was with my parents. And then I have an older sister and a younger brother. And we're actually very close in age. My sister was born in April of 82. My brother was April 85. And I was in between.
Okay.
And so there was three kids, 3 years. I'm not really sure how my parents handled that. I always thought I wanted to have my kids super close like that until I had my first child. And then it's like, this is exhausting. Like, I can't even imagine having that many little kids at the same time.
Yeah, right. Because you've got two little ones.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And yeah, I can see where, you know, making some adjustments in how you parent is important. And what were your parents both into for their life work?
They both were computer programmers.
Oh, interesting. And so, you go ahead.
A lot of how I think my brain works very similarly to them and kind of the computer programmer space.
Yeah. And what were some of the interests that you had as a child?
There's a lot to do with sports and being outdoors. I grew up on a lake, and so we spent a ton of times outside, like fishing or swimming, or in the winter we would shovel off an ice rink, and so we'd be able to be out there ice skating. There was also a woods near our house, so in the winter we would kind of stomp around there and make snow forts. And yeah, we spent a lot of time outside.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. Well, how did your family, when there were challenges that came up in the family, how did your family approach challenges and how did you navigate them?
It was a lot of communication and understanding, you know, how what you were doing was impacting, you know, that other person, and really working together, you know, with three kids that close in age and all of us playing sports, there was a lot of collaboration going on just to get everyone the same place at the same time and being able to work together in that area. And then also my parents were very good about, I mean, it was probably easier back then without, you know, the 24/7 connection, but they're very good at work being done and then finding that time to spend with the family.
Sure. And when did you begin asserting self-leadership, really taking charge of your own destiny and personal growth and development?
Yeah, I would say it was really when I opened my own business. So it was in 2016 that I opened my own business, and it was kind of forced into the, you know, self-leadership, personal development. I learned a ton about myself. I always say I learned more in the, you know, 5 years since I opened my business than I had in the 30-some years before that, especially when you're a solopreneur. So it's, you know, just me, myself, and I'm providing a service. So there was a lot of limiting beliefs that I had to understand and also push through in order to, you know, value, really truly value that service that I was providing to organizations. A struggle for me was that the service I'm providing, it was something that came naturally to me. It was easy. It was something that I just automatically and always did within every single, you know, employment position that I had. And so it was a struggle for me to see, to realize that not everyone had this, and then to also value that service.
Yeah, because it comes naturally to you.
Yeah,
it's easy. You enjoy it.
Yeah. It wasn't until the end of my career when I was making that leap from an employee to, you know, business owner that I was like, oh, maybe not everyone does this, I guess. Looking back, the reason that I was able to make so many changes within, you know, my tasks and the processes that I came in contact with was because no one else had done it before me.
Right. So you acquired a BA degree at the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University in Herman in math with a history minor. Yeah, the College of St. Ben and St. John's, they're just a few miles apart. So you took classes at both colleges?
Yeah, so the College of St. Benedict is the female college. St. John's is the all-male college, but we all take classes together. So the majors, you know, if you're a German major, then you're taking classes, you know, the same classes as the St. John's guys. It's kind of just the different campuses. So it's a unique experience having essentially being a part of two universities.
Yeah. And you were able to play hockey too. Tell us a little bit about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, I grew up on a lake. And so since I was 3 or 4, I would be out there learning how to skate and spent a lot of time on the ice in the winter, just playing around at first. I kind of wanted to be a figure skater because that's kind of the only thing I saw of females being on the ice. And so I'd go off and I'd, you know, practice my crossovers and do little jumps and just had fun in the backyard. Never actually took figure skating lessons, but you know, became a very proficient ice skater. The neighborhood kids would come over and play all the time. So we're out there a ton. And then when I was about 12 is when women's hockey, or like girls' hockey, actually became more of a thing. And so having that ice skating experience and loving being on the ice, I signed up for a girls' hockey team and absolutely, completely fell in love with the sport and continued to played in high school, and then ended up having the opportunity to also play at the College of St. Benedict throughout college. And I did, however, I didn't really fully know what I, you know, wanted to be when I grew up, when I went to college, but I knew like I wanted a 4-year degree. I wanted to play hockey and I wanted to study abroad. And so the hockey and study abroad kind of conflicted with each other a bit, because hockey spans both semesters. So it starts in the fall and then ends in the spring semester, and studying abroad, you know, you typically do it one semester or the other.
Oh, right.
But that's such a huge desire of mine that I didn't let hockey stop me. And I ended up studying abroad the fall semester of my junior year. And I was actually the first hockey player to do that. And then the next year, so after that, more and more of the hockey players took that opportunity.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I think is wonderful.
Yeah, you're a bit of a trailblazer.
Yeah, that's my thinking outside the box. If you you know, tell me I can't do something, I say, are you sure? Because I think I might be able to do that.
right.
So I loved hockey. Also loved studying abroad. I thought when I studied abroad that, you know, I would see the main places. You go to London, Paris, Berlin, and then, you know, be done with traveling. But I also actually completely fell in love with traveling and ended up traveling more even after college.
Yeah. So you ended up teaching English in Vienna and Austria.
Yep. And then I studied abroad in Salzburg, Austria. And then the year after I graduated college, I spent 9 months in Vienna, Austria, teaching English. And then came back to the U.S. Like, I always wanted to see everything, but I'm such a homebody that I knew that I would end up living, you know, back in Minnesota. And so after teaching English, I came back. I was like, all right, I'm going to, you know, be a real person. I'm going to get a real job and it's going to be great and wonderful. And I got, you know, kind of my first 40-hour job, my career at a smaller company, probably about 10 people in the office. And, you know, kind of thought, you know, my parents kind of did that. We worked at the same company for 30, 40 years. So I was like, all right, this is my company. I'm going to work there forever. And then after about 4 months of working there, I realized that, all right, I kind of have things figured out. I did what I usually do, which was take a 40-hour per week role and update the tasks and processes and automate it so much that it only took me about 20 hours to do. And so I was quickly looking for kind of that next thing.
Yeah.
And I ended up finding a MBA and internship program in London. So it was actually full-time work in London and part-time coursework. And then it ended with 3 months of full-time coursework in Bangkok, Thailand.
Yeah. And that brought you a lot of insights into organizations, I imagine.
Yeah. So working in a different culture. So just getting, you know, London has a lot of different cultures just within there. So working within a larger city and then an international organization. And it was wonderful having all those different experiences. And I actually learned a lot of my Excel knowledge and skills when I was working within London. My kind coworkers would would let me ask questions, or as I was watching them do different things, they'd, you know, be kind enough when I said, "Hey, what's that? How did you do that?" They would then show me, and then I could go off and kind of practice and learn it on my own. And so that was a ton of fun.
That's cool.
This is a good spot to shift and finish out this conversation so that we can learn more about how you meet your husband, Craig, and your children, and then also talk about four other business junk drawers that we need to stay on top of.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for being so open. And I appreciate all your life experiences, too, that you're bringing a lot into the workplace from a broader perspective, because you've got a global reach with your other work that you have done living outside of the United States. And that makes a big difference in your perspective, in suggestions of how businesses can be more efficient.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being here, Sarah.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Okay. And thanks for tuning in, everybody. And make sure that you're taking some steps this week to get in your three business junk drawer areas, getting more control over them. So the first one that we talked about was financial anything. So take a look at that drawer, your customer service issues, and then also quality assurance. How are you providing and keeping the products and services that you're doing at the quality level that they need to be at in order to continue growing your business? All right. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. We'll see you all next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a We Mentor Lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.